Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to today's episode. Before I tell you too much about my guest, I want to ask you a couple of questions. Have you ever thought about why? Why do NAD levels get so depleted in the body? NAD, as many of you know, is a powerful anti-aging compound, and it is critical to cellular energy, which frankly runs our show. So if we don't have cellular energy, we don't have energy, no energy, no you, right? We got that. So we've been beating around the NAD bush now for, I think this is probably the third or fourth episode. And if you're rolling your eyes, kind of saying, oh no, not another NAD supplement, let me stop you right there. And let me ask you again, have you ever thought about why does NAD get depleted? Why do our levels go down as we age? What is it in the body that changes that makes us less efficient at recycling NAD, which is what we're supposed to be doing in the first place? Well, today's guest asked those very same questions and has come up and formulated a supplement that goes to solve the problem. My guest's name is Nicola Conlon, and Nicola is the CEO and founder of a company in the UK called Nushido. Nicola is an accomplished molecular biologist who specializes in the study of aging as a biologically complex disorder. Therefore, what she's really saying is that aging is a solvable problem. She received her PhD in physiology from Newcastle University, which is home to the largest institute for aging research in Europe, and she's also a trained cosmetic scientist. What she did is basically Nicola founded Nushido to bring potent, life-enhancing scientific discoveries and education to the public with speed and transparency. So you'll find out in the episode as well that the Time Plus is but the first in a series of products that Nushido is bringing to market in the next little while. And what Nicola's work strives to do is to translate recent scientific discoveries into interventions to increase health span and vitality, and recognizes that while such great progress has been made in treating age-related ailments, the focus really now, as we all know, has to be placed on reducing the burden of these diseases as we live longer lives, right? There's no point living till you're 100 if you don't get to enjoy it. So this is one of those anti-aging or healthy aging episodes. Hope you enjoy it, listening to it as much as I enjoyed recording it. This was, Nicola was just a pleasure to speak with. And if you do get value from the episode, please make sure to leave us a review on whatever, wherever you're listening to the podcast. And please also share the episode out. If you decide you simply must get your hands on some Time Plus, then you can go to nushido.com and enter promo code longevity10, and you get to save 10% on your purchase. If you're looking to connect with me, if you have any questions or comments about the episode, you can find me on Instagram. It's just Natalie Nidham, just my name, or you can reach out to me on my through my website, which is natnidham.com. And of course, you can find me in the Biohacking Superhuman Performance groups on Facebook and on MeWe if you're not a Facebook fan. So thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate you guys and enjoy the episode. Good afternoon, Nicola. It's so great to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to have a nice chat with you today.
Yes. Well, we'll continue our chat anyway. As usual, folks, as you know, I always kind of record a pre-podcast before the podcast with my guests. And Nicola and I have had a vastly kind of a big conversation around a bunch of stuff right now. So, but today we're going to talk about, we're going to ultimately end up talking about Nushido Time Plus, which is a new supplement and a new entry and a new way of approaching NAD optimization in the body. But before we do that, I always find it interesting to learn a bit more about my guests and how they got to be doing what they're doing today. So Nicola, when I first met you, when we first met by video, I'm like, oh yeah, she's like 22. This will be interesting. And apparently you're not. So Nicola, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself, how, where it all started and how you came to be where you are today doing what you do?
Well, first of all, I'm definitely not 22. I have an 11-year-old daughter, so 22 is a little low, to say the least. But no, thanks for having me. And yeah, I guess I'll go through my journey of how I ended up being where I am today and being really heavily involved in anti-aging research. Certainly somewhere that I would have never thought I would have found myself, but I've always had a really, really keen interest in just how the body works. I've always been fascinated by it. Biology's just always been my favourite subject throughout my life. So I ended up, going to uni, doing a physiology degree, was really into that. That led on to doing a master's, really enjoyed that. That led on to doing a PhD. So basically I ended up being at uni for about 10 years just because I was so fascinated to keep learning more and more about how our body works. By the time I got to my PhD, I'd kind of specialized in cellular physiology, specifically how do cells let things in and out? So how does cells let nutrients in and out? How do they let molecules like amino acids or fatty acids or anything that they need inside the cell across the membranes? And ultimately that led me down a route of drug development and looking at drugs and nutrient transport and how when you take a drug or a molecule, like a nutrient or a supplement, how does that actually go from, being in your mouth as a little tablet to actually being in the cell where it needs to be?
Okay, I'm loving this. I just want you to know you're like hitting all the marks for me.
That's good. Because it's so important because, people just swallow a pill and don't really think about what happens to it. And unfortunately, there's a lot of things on the market where they don't even get into your cells, despite spending a lot of money on products that really don't get to where they're supposed to be. So I spent some time in academia. I soon realized that academia wasn't for me. I didn't like being so niche on one tiny little area. And, I thought maybe going into industry would be a better thing to do. So I decided to go and go into drug development. So I went to work for a drug development company. I initially worked on cancer drugs, so immuno-oncology drugs, immunotherapy drugs. And I guess I went into drug development quite naive. I thought that by going to work in drug development that I would help millions and millions of people around the world by developing drugs getting
an unreasonable assumption.
Yes. Getting this amazing science out of a lab and into people's, lives and houses and whatnot. However, after a couple of years doing that, I soon realized that was a very naive thing for me to think. And drugs companies don't often work that way. Basically, the way I got into aging research was whilst I was working at a drug development company. It was an early stage biotech company. So it was right at the very initial stages of drug development. So this is like where you've got a disease or a problem and you're trying to look at the very initial targets of how you're going to fix this problem. So looking at the underlying biology and working out which things you want to target. And it was also, it wasn't a startup, it was past a startup, but it had, it was a fairly small company, which was good for me because it meant that I got to experience a lot of the company and how it operated. And this particular company, the reason I was really interested in working there was because they had a really different approach to drug development. So usual drug development, just to summarize for people that don't know what goes on, is that in, big drug companies, generally what happens is they will say, okay, we've got this disease or this problem, say it's a breast cancer. And they'll say, okay, so there's this particular protein or gene or something that's implicated in this disease. And if we can switch this gene or protein off, or we can block it, then we can switch off the cancer basically. So what they'll do is they'll say, this is like what's called a single target approach. So you've got this one thing, and then you wanna design a drug that will stick to this one thing and basically switch it off and then that'll cure the problem. Yeah. And that's how a lot of drugs are actually developed. Now, the problem is that, well, there's two problems. The first is that biology is very, very complex, mm-hmm. and you can never, ever do one thing. Like, there's so many things going on in your body. There's so many pathways. Everything's linked. Every single pathway shows redundancy, which means even if you switch off one pathway, there's like five others that just upregulate, because yeah. our body's made to last. It's made to survive and not have things switched off.
I call that backup plans.
Yes,
like your body always has a backup plan. And that's such an important point to make, I think. And it's part of the reason why we don't break as often as we probably should, because of what you're talking about, these redundancies, where if the body can't get from point A to point B by this route, it has all these other different mechanisms it can call on. And I would guess that cancer cells, I mean, to some degree, operate in a similar fashion, maybe not quite as much, because definitely there's been some progress in cancer treatments using that approach, but what do you think?
Yeah, and this is often why in cancer treatments now, instead of using one therapy, you use multi-therapies. So okay. like different multi-therapies alongside each other. But just in general, in biology, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. The body has backup plans. We're built to be robust. We're built to last. Biology is built in that way. And what that means is, if you're trying to switch a single thing off, it's very, very unlikely that you're going to actually see any impact on the physiology of a particular disease. And so that's one problem with conventional drug discovery. The second problem is by saying, okay, we've got this one target and we're going to stick a drug to it and knock it out. Drugs do not stick to one thing. They are very promiscuous molecules. They stick to a lot of things in the body, and that's sometimes referred to as off-target effects. And this is why a lot of drugs have a lot of side effects, because yes, they might stick to that one thing, but they also stick to 100 other things. And they're also doing all sorts of other stuff in the body that you weren't planning for. Mm-hmm. So the reason I really liked this company was it did something called systems pharmacology, which is a different approach. And what this does is it actually looks at the complexity of the body. So it goes, okay, so we've got this disease, like, let's just not focus on one little thing that's going wrong in this disease. Let's look at everything. So let's look at all of these proteins or genes that are implicated in it. Then let's look at everything that they talk to, and then everything that they talk to and their neighbors with. And by the end of it, you've got this giant network of thousands of different proteins and genes and pathways that are all somehow implicated in this disease.
Okay.
And then what you do is you go, okay, instead of just targeting one little bit of this massive network, let's look at what is the best combination of multiple targets that you have to knock out to be able to actually really impact that disease. So you get rid of this redundancy, you completely blow it apart. Yeah. And that's what they did. So they found a way to basically calculate what is the best combination of targets to actually do something about that disease. And then once they had got that combination of, say, five or six targets within the cell, they would then go, okay, let's look at a big library of molecules, and let's look to see if there are any known drugs or molecules that actually stick to those five or six things.
Okay.
So in that way, you're actually taking advantage of the fact that drugs stick to many things.
Right.
And you actually want them to stick to many things, but you're controlling and you know what they're sticking to. And what they found by doing this approach was that actually, if you take this rather than a single target approach, you take the multi-target approach, you have a huge improvement in the hit rate of drugs. So the hit rate is actually which ones work.
Yeah.
And to put that into perspective, conventional drug discovery using a single target, trying to stick a single molecule to it, out of all the drugs that are tested, it's only about 0.01% that actually make it through to actually being a drug. And actually, so that's huge. So on our initial screenings using this multi-target approach, we were finding up to 20% of these molecules were actually working the way that we wanted them to work and having less side effects, because we were really accounting for the biology and not just ignoring the complexity and not ignoring the fact that drugs stick to many things. So for me, that's, you know, that was something that I was really fascinated by, because it was, you know, at the time it was a really, really new approach. It hadn't really been done before. So that's how I was, you know, brought up to do drug development. I never went through the single target approach. You know, I never ever went through that sort of way of doing it. And basically, so it's a bit of a long story, but the way I eventually got into
aging, we're getting there. I know it. I've heard this.
We are the way I got into aging, into aging research, because most people go aging and drug development, like where on earth, like they don't go together. And anyone who follows aging research will have certainly heard of someone called Aubrey de Grey.
Yeah.
So he's quite famous in the world of aging. You know, he's a real advocate for being able to reverse aging, and he's heavily involved in the industry. And basically, he found out about the way we were doing drug development, and he contacted our company and said, you know what, the way that you do drug development is ideally suited to looking for drugs to slow aging, because aging is really, really complex. There's multiple things going wrong. It's not a single thing. You know, there's all the hallmarks of aging. There's all the interplay between them. Have you ever thought of looking, using your approach to look for anti-aging drugs? So anyway, that's how I ended up doing it, because I got made the head of the aging project. And then since then, after never really looking at aging, I became absolutely fascinated by it, because it underpins the majority of disease that we suffer now as a society.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, that's quite the journey. And I would say that, so guys, you'll see a picture of Nicola, and you know, she looks like she's 22. So whatever she's doing, I want some. So, all right. So is that how Nushido was born, basically? That the name of the company that you work for, or that you, what's your...
Yeah, so Nushido was born because, as I said, I went into drug development naively. Part of my job was to sit and look at lists of molecules that actually did what we want them to do. So for example, in the case of cancer, they killed cancer cells in a Petri dish and did it really well. And then what I would do is go through them and basically put all the best ones in the bin, because you couldn't get a patent to protect them.
Right.
And no drug company is interested in that, because either they were a natural molecule that you couldn't protect, or someone else owned it. So I was like, hang on a minute, there's things that actually work really well that are like suitable for supplements, that no, that the research is never going to see the light of day because they're within a drugs company. So right. When we started the aging project, I was like, we're in a bit of a different situation here, because there's actually companies out there, like supplement companies and skincare companies, that would absolutely snap your arm off to have some of this data that shows this is really anti-aging.
Yeah. Kidding.
So Nushido is basically founded and by myself and a co-founder who I also worked alongside in drug development, basically to, you know, to get this science out to people much quicker. Because it's going to be a long time before we have anti-aging drugs or drugs to improve our health span. But the things that you can be doing now, or in our case, there are, you know, supplements and molecules that you can be using now that do have some really good science behind it. So we wanted to take our expertise of drug development and basically bring it into the supplement market.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, there are a lot of supplements out there that really do not have good science behind them. Mm-hmm. So that's how Nushido was born.
Great. And so you've picked a very hot area of optimization as your first product, to target your first product. And this is this whole, and it makes total sense. You're really targeting about, it's about energy production in the cell. And that is anybody, I think at this point, anybody listening to this, or most people listening to this, will understand that this is at the root, whether it's of aging or chronic diseases, if the cellular ability to produce energy and to hold that ratio between the NAD and NADH gets thrown off, then at a cellular level, you have a problem. And yet if you can correct that, all of a sudden things start to cascade in the positive direction, just as they can cascade in the wrong direction. So
yes.
this is your first entry in the market. It's called Time Plus. And it's pretty cool because it the packaging looks like it's a time capsule, which I'm sure was quite intentional. So let's talk a bit about Time Plus and about the ingredients in this supplement, because like I was saying to Nicola earlier, you know, I got my bottle and I was super excited and I looked at the ingredients and I was slightly underwhelmed. I was like, oh, well, I've heard of most of this, well, all of this stuff. So, but, you know, when Nicola had explained it to me, how this supplement addresses NAD in the cell really made me perk my ears up, because a lot of attention right now is about the precursors to make NAD. So things like NMN or nicotinamide riboside, nicotinamide mononucleotide. And we're also going to talk a little bit about something that someone in my group brought up recently, which is reduced nicotinamide mononucleotide or NMNH. So it seems, you know, and then there's, of course, people who will try to go straight for the money and they'll do infusions of NAD intravenously, or they'll try, I've tried NAD patches, which kind of backfired on me because I didn't respond well to the actual patch. So let's talk a little bit about this whole idea of other approaches right now that people are trying to use, which seem to be single pathway, right? Either we're trying to give the body NAD, hoping it's going to get to the right place, or we're ingesting, whether it's sublingually or orally, the precursors to NAD and hoping that that produces more NAD in the cell. So Time Plus is going about this very differently, which I was like, when I first learned about it, I was like, oh my God, that is so cool. So off you go, Nicola.
Yeah. So I guess maybe it's just for those of that who don't realize, like, what is NAD and why is it important?
Yes.
And just to sort of lay the background down. So NAD, it's a natural molecule that's found in every single cell in your body. And it's so important in your body that if you didn't have it in your cells, you'd literally be dead in 30 seconds, because it's that critical to generate in the cellular energy in your cells and in your mitochondria. And it's estimated to be involved in over 500 different reactions in the body. So when we're going back to networks, just bear in mind how big of a footprint NAD actually has in the cell for this one molecule, like how many things it's influencing and interacting with and sort of, you know, talking to, basically. But, you know, aside from the 500 reactions, the main things that it's really important for are firstly cellular energy production. It helps convert the food that you eat into the energy source of ATP that the cells actually use to survive and perform all the functions. The second really important thing that it does is that it actually acts as a signaling molecule to kind of sense the, you know, what state the cell is in, essentially. And when your NAD levels are high, it basically tells the cell to switch on many maintenance and repair pathways, which keep the cell in good health. They keep it recycling damaged proteins. They activate DNA repair, things like that. When your NAD drops low, it kind of signals that the cell isn't in a state where it needs to repair itself, and this cellular maintenance and repair pathways start to get turned down. Now, when you're young, your NAD levels sort of the peak and trough throughout the day, and it's like signaling whether like you've just taken in food and therefore you've got like abundance of nutrients and it doesn't need to recycle and activate autophagy and things. Then, you know, it might drop down if you're fasting, because, you know, back in the olden days where we used to have to, you know, kill our food and hunt and things, we'd go for long periods where we had to fast and there was no food coming in, the NAD would drop, and that signaled that the cell had to put itself in a state of preservation and repair and look after what it already had, basically. So that's the other really important thing that NAD does.
So, sorry to interrupt, but so then you basically want that cycle. You want periods of high NAD and periods of low NAD so that you're initiating different processes in the system at different times.
Exactly.
Right. And so, which is inherently our one of the big issues in society right now, is that people tend to live in this constant state of excess.
Yeah.
And so the cell, the body never really gets to cycle through those down-regulated times where it has to turn inward and do the maintenance and repair work and recycling, as it were.
Yeah, we just, you know, we're constantly eating 24/7. We don't have a chance to sort of tap into that side of our biology, which, as you say, is really critical. And the main problem that we have with NAD is that it declines as we get older. Right. And if your NAD is becoming chronically low, then it means all of these cellular maintenance and repair pathways are actually getting switched off. So you've got less recycling, you've got less DNA repair, less energy, because NAD is really important for mitochondrial function. So all of these things that NAD is actually making sure are keeping going are actually turned off, and they are major hallmarks of aging. So DNA damage, mitochondrial dysfunction, lack of nutrient sensing, they are major things that contribute to aging.
Right. Lack of autophagy as well, right?
And
cellular senescence as well, right?
Yeah. It's really those zombies. At the center of all of them, it's really interacting with all of them. So if your NAD levels have become chronically low as you get older, cellular maintenance repair gets switched off, you accumulate damage in the cells, and the damage manifests as the signs and symptoms that we would associate with aging.
Okay.
So that's the kind of background of how NAD is linked to aging. And it sounds pretty grim because, you know, our NAD levels, they decline by 50% every 20 years, which ultimately means by the time we're 20, we've already lost half of the NAD we were born with. So that's quite scary. But the good news is that it's now been demonstrated that actually if you boost your NAD levels back up to youthful levels, that you can actually restore the function of all these cellular maintenance and repair pathways, and you can actually reverse a lot of the damage that's been done. So there's a lot of excitement around boosted NAD levels to be able to help with, you know, age-related disease and health span and longevity. So that's why it's implicated in health span and longevity and anti-aging. And I guess before I explain how Nichido Time Plus works, it really helps for people to just understand why your NAD is actually declining in the body.
Yeah.
Because if it's so important, it's like, well, why does it go down?
Yeah. And the other thing is, I think that's important to mention, is it naturally declines with age, but we also have certain disease states that drive it down, right?
Yeah.
So NAD optimization, whatever pathway we're going to use, whatever method we're going to use, is not just going to serve that population of people that's trying to manage their health span as their longevity increases, but it's also going to serve people with things like chronic fatigue syndrome or any of these metabolic diseases.
Yes.
Will rob the body of its natural. So it can kick in earlier than some, right? I mean, we were talking about this before the podcast, that, you know, the people who are going to notice the greatest uptick or the greatest noticeable benefits from a supplement that optimizes NAD levels like Time Plus are going to be the people that are either over, I mean, pick a number. I mean, the problem now is pick a number, right? Depending on your state of health, you could start to experience those symptoms of decreased NAD in your 40s, definitely by your 50s, and absolutely by the time you're in your 60s and 70s. So those people for sure should notice a benefit. But then you've got people with other types of chronic diseases who are maybe younger, and so their NAD is prematurely dropping.
Yeah.
Right? And so I don't know if you're able to speak to very briefly about some of the conditions that you've seen that seem to get benefit from this. Like, we're not going to be able to make medical claims here, obviously, guys, like that's not what this is about, but starting to understand if you have some of these conditions, that this might be something to explore for you to see if it helps you along. And I'm wondering, even with something like, you know, COVID, that's, you know, you've got people who are long haulers, right? So these people who just can't seem to shake the effects, the lasting effects of this infection that they got, let's say. And when you read what they're experiencing, it speaks to the body just can't recover. Like, it can't make its energy anymore. Could something like this maybe be helpful to them?
Yeah. So I guess the first thing to consider is, you know, NAD is affected by a lot of different things. So like naturally the levels that your body can just make due to your genetics, then also through your diet and lifestyle. So things like if you're doing lots of exercise, that can increase your NAD levels. If you're sedentary, that's going to decrease them. If you're practicing fasting, intermittent fasting, things like that, that improves your NAD levels. If you're eating junk food 24/7, your NAD levels are definitely going to be lower. So, you know, the age at which you start to sort of suffer from low NAD, it is dependent on your lifestyle.
Yeah.
But in general, it decreases as you get older, no matter how good your lifestyle is. And that is just because generally, as you get older, you've been around for longer, your cells are accumulating more damage and NAD is used up when it is repairing damage.
Yeah.
And your cells are acquiring more inflammation. And again, some of these inflammatory proteins like CD38 really waste a lot of NAD in the cell, which means that again, naturally you're going to have lower NAD as you get older. And you find with, you mentioned earlier, metabolic syndrome type diseases, fatty liver, things like that, diabetes tend to have lower NAD levels. And this is because the, you know, they've got, it's kind of linked to mitochondrial dysfunction.
Yeah.
You know, not as efficient energy production mm-hmm. as you'd want to have in these diseases. A lot of people who benefit from NAD boosting are people that have some sort of real problem with their mitochondria and the energy production, such as chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme's disease. We have a lot of people who benefit where they have real, you know, really suffered with Lyme's disease, where it's just knocked them for six and they just have a real lack of energy and brain fog and things like that. And NAD can help that. And I guess the very interesting and topical one right now is the link between NAD and COVID. So there have been studies that have shown that actually when cells are infected with the SARS-CoV virus, the NAD levels plummet in these cells. Like they just really drop through the floor. Mm-hmm. And then what the cell tries to do, when you look at the gene expression patterns and how it changes when the cells have been infected with the virus, you see that the cell actively tries to upregulate lots of genes associated with making more NAD, almost like it's panicking and being like, right, we need to make more NAD to try and repair and maintain the cell.
Yeah.
So basically the COVID is causing a massive drop in NAD. So if you think of an older person who already has really low NAD and then they're going to drop again, you can see why older people are really struggling with this disease. And, you know, look at all the people that have much higher risk of developing COVID. That's people with metabolic disorders and underlying conditions. They all are starting off from a worse point as far as their NAD is considered. So when they get an infection, they're already starting off with a handicap, basically.
Yeah.
That's been suggested as could be one of the reasons why these people are either getting a much worse disease or taking a lot longer to actually recover from it, because they're really starting from low down and having to climb back up again.
Right.
So that's really interesting. And there's been a lot of really interesting research going into that. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about Time Plus. Let's talk about your approach, because, well, actually, before we do that, let's just talk quickly. Well, we can do it one of two ways. You decide. Either we can talk about Time Plus and how it works, because I find it super fascinating and I know the listeners will as well. And then we can talk, maybe come out of that talking about how it really is different than all these precursors that are being marketed to people right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, this comes back to, and this is why your backstory is so interesting. The bottom line is, it comes down to, how do the supplements we take get to where we need them to get? And are they getting there? You know, is the NMN or the NR actually able to get to the cell where it can do what we're hoping it's going to do? So you decide which side of the equation you want to start from.
Okay. So I'm going to start with explaining how most supplements boost NAD.
Yeah.
So this is things like NR or NMN. These are things that we would refer to as a precursor approach to boosting NAD, because essentially what NR or nicotinamide riboside or NMN, which is nicotinamide mononucleotide, what they are is they are the raw materials that your body uses to make into NAD. So they're like the building blocks, essentially.
Yep.
So the idea behind these supplements is that your NAD has gone down. So the theory is if you supplement with more of the raw material, hopefully some of it will end up in your cells and hopefully the cells will actually convert it into NAD. Okay. So there's kind of a lot of things you've got to hope for.
There's a lot of wishful thinking, yes. It's not illogical. And it's not illogical, but
it's not illogical. And there is evidence to show that precursors do boost your NAD levels, and they boost them by about 40-60%. That's the published data for those precursor type products. Which, if you think that your NAD has declined by 50% by the time you're 20, and then it's half in every 20 years after that on an exponential rate. If you've got a 60 or 70 year old, taking something that's going to boost their NAD by 40%, it's not really going to cut it very much.
Well, just to go over that math, it's boosting it 40% from where they are.
Exactly.
So at 20, you lost 50. Then at 40, yeah, you will have lost 50 of the 50 that's left.
Exactly.
Then at 60, you will have lost 50 of the 50. Now you're boosting 40% from way low levels.
Exactly. I think this is why a lot of people, especially older people, just say, they try taking NR or NMN and just don't really feel anything because it's so tiny, the effect that they're getting. Going back to what I was talking about before of this single target approach, using a precursor is exactly what we would describe as a single target approach. And to get people to understand this, I always like to get people to think of the cell as being like a factory. Yeah. So if you've got your NAD producing factory and you have suddenly found that, the factory is now 20 years old and production's really gone down, and this is because the machines are broken and there's pipes leaking all the raw material out and the staff are all skiving. do you think that the best way to fix that problem is to just get on the phone and order some more raw material, and when the raw material is delivered, just hope that that factory is suddenly going to increase production because they've now got more raw material?
Not if the pipes are leaking and the machines are broken and your staff is lying on the floor trying to get themselves back up again.
exactly that. And that is exactly what precursors are doing. They're ignoring everything that's going on in the cell, everything that's causing this NAD decline, because it's multiple things. And they're just putting more raw material in. Mm-hmm. And what they're actually really failing to look at is what's actually going on that causes NAD decline. And the main things that are causing the NAD decline in the cell are, firstly, way more NAD is getting used up. You've got overexpression of all these different proteins like CD38 and the DNA repair enzymes that are all just chewing up NAD like there's no tomorrow. The other thing is that the enzymes, or like the machines in the factory, that actually convert that raw material, those precursors, into NAD actually decline with age. So you're putting raw material into a cell that doesn't have the enzymes to be able to process it correctly.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's a real problem. And often what you find is that by ignoring these problems, sometimes taking precursors can actually make the situation in the cells worse, because yes, you might get that precursor in and get that initial boost in NAD, but actually what happens is when NAD is actually used up in the cell, it's broken back down into another precursor called nicotinamide. And in young cells, what would normally happen is that nicotinamide's actually recycled straight back into NAD again. So without any new raw material coming in, it just keeps going round and round.
Which is awesome when you're
young. Which is good. And that is how the majority of NAD is made in your cells when you're young. It's called the salvage pathway. Yeah. But there's an enzyme called NAMPT, which is the rate limiting step in that pathway. So basically it's the part that has to be working for that pathway to work, that declines. So this recycling doesn't happen. So if you are putting precursor into the cell, it's then being used up and you're breaking it down into the waste products. All of a sudden, the cell can't recycle these waste products again like it did when it was young. So it has to get rid of them. So what happens is the cell actually methylates this waste product, this waste nicotinamide, to get rid of it out of the cell. And this is a problem because methylation is basically adding it's like a little chemical tag onto onto the nicotinamide, which signals the cell to say, right, you need to get it out in the rubbish chute, basically. And methyl groups are really, really important in epigenetics. So switching on genes on and off. So if your cell's using all its methyl groups to try and get rid of this waste nicotinamide out the cell, that's a real problem. And you get what's called methyl donor depletion. And this is why, if you're familiar with NAD supplements, a lot of people say you should be taking like a methyl donor at the same time stop this from happening. And this is just showing how, you're taking one supplement to try and fix something, and then you're making another problem worse, because nothing in biology is in isolation.
Right.
There's all other things going on. So that's, we looked at that whole approach and said,
so this whole push approach that's just, it's a push without an escape hatch on the other side for the waste products that you're producing. And does this speak a little bit to the NAD-NADH balance as well? Because that ratio is really important. Proper NAD and NADH.
Yeah. Again, so some people go, supplement with NADH. it's not addressing the underlying problem of what is actually happening in the cell causing all these imbalances.
Okay.
So basically the way that we looked at it was, okay, let's, instead of doing this single target approach, let's use what we call a whole systems approach. So let's look at everything that is going on in this problem as we get older, where NAD is declining, and let's work out what multiple things we need to do in the cell in order to fix this. So we don't just want to be filling the factory with more raw material. We actually want to fix the factory. So we want to fix the cell's ability to be able to make and recycle the NAD like it did when it was young.
Right.
So that means you need to do multiple things. So the first thing you need to do is you need to actually fix the machines. So this is fix the enzymes. So that recycling pathway that I mentioned, the salvage pathway, that is the main way that your cells make NAD when they're young. They just recycle it. As soon as it's broken down, it gets converted to nicotinamide, and then the cells recycle it. So our product is actually designed to fix that pathway.
Cool.
Because then you're actually restoring the cell's ability to make its own NAD. You don't even need to put the precursor in anymore, because you're actually restoring your cell's own ability to do it. So that's one little part of the puzzle. The other thing is, let's look at all the things that are wasting NAD, because there's no point making more NAD if you've got other things that are wasting it that needn't be wasting it. So a really key one, which there's been a lot of publicity on in the scientific world recently, is CD38. So CD38 is an inflammatory protein that's expressed on the membrane of your cells that increases as you get older. And CD38 really, really wastes NAD. It constantly breaks it down into nicotinamide and just wastes it. And you end up with all this nicotinamide, which, if you've got a good salvage pathway, like you did when you were young, it can recycle it. So that's good. So one of the, the recent publications that's come out is actually showing if you can inhibit CD38, you can actually boost your NAD levels quite significantly, without putting any raw material in. You're just stopping it from wasting it. So you're like fixing the leaky pipes, as we always like to say.
Yeah. So is there a downside? So I know that, for example, in genetics, when we look at different detox enzymes, right, like your CYP3A4 or like the genes that regulate these detoxification enzymes, you always have to walk a line between upregulating or downregulating a gene, because it doesn't only, to your point, it doesn't only do one thing. It may be downregulating something you don't want to downregulate, but at the same time, it could be downregulating something that you do want to downregulate. So just boosting it is not necessarily going to give you the greatest outcome. So with CD38, is it in general a sign of negative inflammation, or is there a downside to bringing it down, to downregulating it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the key thing in which is specific to CD38 is that actually you only need to inhibit it very, very slightly to have a big impact. Oh, cool. And that is because, so for example, let's think the DNA repair enzymes that use NAD.
Yeah.
In order for them to, this is simplifying it quite a lot, so it's not totally factually correct, but in order for them to process a bit of DNA repair, they only require 3 NAD molecules to do that. Okay. So if you think they're repairing NAD like constantly, they're only using 3 molecules at a time, which seems like a lot, but compared to CD38, for one of CD38's reactions, it takes 50 NAD molecules.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that means that you only need to inhibit a little bit of CD38 to actually make a big difference. Right. Whereas like DNA repair, not that you'd want to inhibit that, but you would have to inhibit it a lot to actually make a significant difference on the NAD levels in the cell. So that's the beauty of CD38 inhibition. You only need a small amount of inhibition to have a big effect on the cell,
right,
which means that you're not completely blocking it. So it's not like it doesn't.
You're toggling it down. You're dialing it down a little bit. You're not disengaging it in some way.
Exactly. Exactly.
That makes sense. Okay.
So that's the other, one of the other targets that actually is really important in NAD biology. The other thing is when I was talking about methylation.
Yeah.
So in older cells, like, all of the epigenetics of older cells changes. So they've got different genes switched on and off, and the profile of these cells looks different to a younger person. And one of the things that you find overexpressed in older cells is an enzyme called NNMT, which is this enzyme that methylates nicotinamide and chucks it out of the cell rather than letting it be recycled. So again, inhibiting that just a little bit actually promotes recycling of your precursors. So they just keep going round and round the cell without actually having to introduce any new precursor to the system. So again, that's another little intervention within the cell that you can put alongside all the other interventions to actually impact NAD levels.
Okay.
The other thing is the ratio, which you kind of mentioned earlier.
Yes.
So NAD actually, just to confuse things, exists in two forms. It's NAD plus, which is the one most people are familiar with, and that's the oxidized form. And then you've got NADH, which is the reduced form. And basically all this means is that they're swapping electrons between each state. And actually it's the way it swaps electrons. It's called redox biology. And basically this is the way that our cells make energy, by shuttling electrons between these two different states of NAD.
Right.
And, some people have said, well, why don't we just put more NADH in and then it'll get converted to NAD? But actually, it's been found that the ratio of these two is really important, because it's the ratio of NAD to NADH that's actually turning on these cellular processes, or turning off these cellular processes, depending on how high the NAD levels are. So yes, you want to increase your NAD levels, but that doesn't mean you want to increase your NADH levels as well. And actually the more optimal ratio and the more favorable ratio for health is to have a higher ratio of NAD to NADH.
Okay.
So just because something
like it tips the scale over so that it creates the reaction.
Yes. And just because they're really structurally similar doesn't mean they do the same thing in the body, which some people get confused by. They just think, oh, because they flip between one or the other, they're kind of the same thing and do the same thing. They absolutely don't. So again, we have looked at ways to actually convert NADH to NAD plus. And there's an enzyme called NQO1, which is actually more well known for antioxidant activity. It activates NRF2 and things like that, NRF1. That actually converts NADH to NAD plus as well. So it actually shifts the direction into a more favorable NAD plus NADH ratio. So again, that's another thing that's going on that you know, aside from putting precursors in, all of these things need to be addressed. And only after you've addressed all of these things is it even worth then putting a precursor in.
So that's what I was going to ask. So in the case of a supplement like Time Plus, which, and I mean, I'd love to talk a little bit about the ingredients, because people will look at the ingredient list and find it underwhelming because there's nothing that seems particularly exotic in there. So I'd love to speak to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But in a situation where someone is taking something like Time Plus, which would be addressing the pathways and the machinery, if you will, of recycling NAD, of not wasting NAD, that whole thing, would it at that point then be okay for someone who's really dragging, like someone who's in their 70s or 80s or someone who's really suffering from that low cellular energy, would it then be a positive for them to use the precursors at that point? Like once they've kind of maybe, would it be alongside the Time Plus, or would you want to give your body a couple of months of Time Plus to kind of fix those pathways a bit and then maybe add the NMNNR? Have you ever seen people doing that and getting better results? Or
So we actually have a precursor in Naturo Time Plus.
Yeah, there's no, it's actually nicotinamide.
It's not NR and it's not NMN.
No.
So although a lot of marketing, you know, says the best way to supplement is to use NR or NMN, actually nicotinamide is the one that the body prefers. That is the one that is most bioavailable.
Yeah.
And also it is the one that actually the body prefers to convert into NAD, which is demonstrated by the fact that the salvage pathway is the main production pathway for NAD in the body.
Yeah.
So that is why we use nicotinamide rather than NR or NMN. And also we'd actually tested NR alongside the rest of the ingredients that are designed to fix the cell.
Yeah.
And we didn't find that it worked any better. And actually the nicotinamide actually worked better than that one. Again, bioavailability.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's really, really key. The body is
really about that.
Yeah. It can pass straight through the membrane. It's, you know, there's no problems with bioavailability when it comes to nicotinamide. So yeah, to answer your question, it already has that in.
Okay. Yeah. No, actually, you know what?
So as far as
I'm staring at it right now. I'm like, yeah. As you're saying it, I'm like, yeah, it's there.
Yeah. So maybe if I go through all the ingredients one by one, and I can kind of, you know, say exactly what it is that they're actually doing.
Yeah.
So so first of all, you've got the nicotinamide. So it's one thing to point out is that NAD plus, you know, can it really be just obtained directly from the diet? It's a very unstable molecule. It's broken down in the gut back into precursors, and it, you know, NAD really struggles to pass over the membrane of many cells, because a lot of people just say to me, well, why can't you just take NAD? Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that due to the whole bioavailability issue.
NAD is one of those ones, sorry, just to jump in, like it's expensive to supplement NAD, because you've got to do it either, and time consuming. So it's either you're going intravenously, or now there's this new transdermal kind of delivery that involves ionophoresis, which is an electrical methodology to get it across the skin. And I haven't necessarily looked at the research of how that works. Like I said, I had a massive reaction to the electrical patch that, you know, kind of knocks me out anyway. And then the other one, but again, it's pricey, is sublingual, where in theory it's getting absorbed right into the bloodstream.
Yeah.
But
so, yeah. Just to sidetrack from our ingredients, I'll just quickly talk about, you know, using NAD IV patches, sublingual and stuff like that. So the first thing is, if you are thinking about buying a pill form of NAD plus to take orally, don't buy it because it's just broken down in the stomach. So that's first, do not do that. It's a waste of money. The second thing is, okay, you've got sublingual, IV and subcutaneous. So the idea behind all of those is that they do not go through the gut. They go directly into the blood. the key thing to point out here is that yes, they are going into the blood, but NAD is pretty useless in the blood. It actually needs to be in the cells because that's where the mitochondria are. That's where the DNA is. So where for yeah. DNA repair, things like that. So it actually still has to get over a cell membrane into the cell. Now, there is evidence that there are some cells, particularly neurons, where there are transporters or little channels, basically, that will let this NAD molecule through because NAD is quite large.
Yeah.
But the jury's still really out as to whether the NAD from infusions and sublingual and patches actually goes into the cells intact, or is it broken down in the blood into the precursors like nicotinamide, and then it goes into the cell and then goes into the factory and gets remade in NAD.
Yeah.
So, you know, there hasn't been a lot of studies. There's been a few studies, but again, they're not the best studies. And in terms of bioavailability, and the jury really is still out. But I guess the key thing to mention is whether you're deciding to take a precursor or an IV, or a sublingual or anything, even if you're putting NAD directly into the cells, you might get a sudden boost of NAD, but as soon as it's been used up, you've got the same problem where there's no salvage pathway to recycle it again. So you've kind of had your boost and it's chucked out the cell and methylated.
It's a transient benefit. Like, it's not lasting.
Exactly.
And you've poured a lot of money into this. Not to mention you've, in the case of an IV, you've sat in a chair for 4 or 5 hours feeling like a bag of dirt.
Yeah. So if you're going to get an IV, we would say fix your salvage pathway with Natura Time Plus first, so that at least you get a prolonged benefit and your cells can actually keep recycling that NAD that you've actually put into them.
Yeah.
That's really important. Sorry. So that was a bit of a sidetrack.
That's totally fine. So let's go back to what's Natura Time Plus and how it helps. So we see, I'm looking at my bottle here. There's a little bit of vitamin C. There's a reasonable amount of niacin, which is nicotinamide, right? The ultimate precursor, which is ostensibly the most bioavailable. Then we've got some zinc.
Yep.
So do you want to talk about those other two first, and then we'll get into the blend?
Yeah. The vitamin C and zinc are like, they're addition. They don't actually help with the NAD. They're just things that we put in just because they're so, you know, beneficial to the cell. And there's quite a few people that are actually deficient in them.
Yeah.
And a lot of people take vitamin C and zinc anyway. So kind of combining those two really critical vitamins and minerals into our product kind of seemed like a no-brainer. You know, a lot of people know vitamin C for having its infection fighting reputation and really good for immunity. But actually, there's a lot of data to show just for general health span that people who take a regular dose of vitamin C are actually found to live longer than people that don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's probably due to the fact that it helps reduce inflammation, it protects the integrity of DNA and reduces cellular stress, all things that kind of go hand in hand with the work that NAD does. And then as for zinc, you know, it's so important, as it is an essential micronutrient that's playing a vital role in the immune system. And as you get older, your levels of zinc go down. And basically this really hampers our resilience against infection. So, you know, we're kind of glad that we put those two kind of immune boosting ingredients in well before COVID was even a thing.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and what I'll say, because I know that there's people who are leery of zinc because there are certain people who tend to bioaccumulate zinc, but we're not talking a huge amount here.
No,
we're talking,
it's not a huge.
You know, over the course of a day, you'll be consuming 10 milligrams of zinc. So it's not much more than you might consume in your diet. So many people's diets are compromised at this point anyway, and our food in and of itself is depleted in so many of these nutrients and minerals that for most cases, it shouldn't be an issue. So now let's get to the botanical proprietary blend.
Yeah. So I think you'll have a US label. We've got a couple of versions of the label depending on where it's bought. So I can't remember which order. They're all slightly different order, but
don't think the order matters.
Maybe I'll start just with the green tea.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things, like, as you mentioned earlier, it's like, oh, green tea, you know, I've heard it all before.
That's not exotic,
it's not new. But I have to say, when I was working in drug development, some of those molecules that were kept chucking in the bin because, you know, drugs companies didn't want to touch them, yet they seemed to have fantastic benefits to the body, were some of the molecules out of green tea. Yeah. You know, it's known to be one of the healthiest beverages basically on the planet. And most of the actual benefits of green tea come from a compound called EGCG, which stands for epigallocatechin 3-gallate. But we'll call it EGCG. Yeah. And basically, if you look at the footprint of what EGCG does in the cells, is it actually inhibits the enzyme that I was talking about called NNMT. And this is the one that actually methylates and excretes the precursors out the cell.
Yeah.
So it stops them from being recycled. So the reason the green tea is in there at the concentration it is so that you've got enough of this EGCG, this really powerful compound, to basically inhibit NMMT and prevent methylation, so this methyl donor depletion problem that you get with these other products, to promote the recycling of NAD continuously within the cells.
Amazing. Okay, well, the next, I'll read the ingredients to you. It turns out the green tea leaf extract powder is the first ingredient on the label I'm looking at. Then there's this teensy amount of caffeine, like 3 milligrams.
Yeah, so the caffeine is nothing that we add. It's just the natural caffeine that comes from green tea.
Okay.
So it's, you know, people sometimes go, oh gosh, this caffeine, like that's bad. But it's got like 6 milligrams in, which is compared to a cup of coffee or tea, which normally has about 90 to 110 milligrams in per cup, is really tiny. And again, it's nothing that we add as like an extra additive of caffeine. It's just the naturally occurring caffeine, because it is caffeine and some people are sensitive to it. We do highlight it on the label just for a safety thing more than anything.
Yeah. So you guys, just so you know, some of you may already know this because I've talked about it before. I'm a slow caffeine metabolizer. So I virtually don't consume caffeine, and I've taken this supplement for a couple of weeks and I've never felt that it's had a negative impact on my sleep. Or so in my case, anyways, it's indiscernible. It's 3 milligrams at a time, unless you're pounding caffeine on top of that. But even then, it's going to be a drop in the bucket. Okay. So next we go to parsley leaf powder.
Yeah. So the parsley leaf powder, it basically contains, a molecule called epigenin.
Yeah.
Now epigenin is, scientifically proven to inhibit CD38.
Again.
So this is the one that I was talking about that like uses 50 NAD molecules per reaction. And basically parsley is known to be one of the best natural sources of epigenin. And that's why we put it in there. And there's two reasons for that. So epigenin, in many jurisdictions, you are not allowed to use it in its raw form. It's not approved. Therefore you've got to use it in, you know, put it in as something else, a bit like with the green tea.
Yeah.
And secondly, we're quite, you know, due to my background in bioavailability,
yeah,
I'm a massive fan of putting ingredients or active molecules in there in the rawest possible form, because they're much more bioavailable. So like the using epigenin in parsley leaf as opposed to like a synthetically manufactured or an extracted one is much more bioavailable. And the same with the EGCG, which is why, again, it's in the green tea extract rather than just putting pure EGCG in, because it really helps the body absorb it better.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me about this now, looking at this, you could have gone like with a sexier label, if you will, by saying EGCG, epigenin, you know, all these terms, and people would be like, ooh, I've read about epigenin and I've read about EGCG. And instead you've gone this route of kind of like a little less showy, saying, look, we're using green tea leaf extract. We're using parsley, like we're using basically the whole food form of
which
is ultimately what enables the body sometimes to recognize a compound and, to your point, accept it and assimilate it more efficiently than if we're presenting it to the body as a single entity. that is in isolation and in isolated. And sometimes with things like parsley leaf or green tea leaf, there's other compounds in that whole food that help with the assimilation, or even that might initiate other pathways that support this one pathway that we may or may not be aware of yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many beneficial things in the parsley. You know, it's got multiple compounds with significant health benefits aside from the epigenin, and the same goes for green tea. It's almost a waste not to have those in as well.
Right. Okay, great. Okay, cool. Next we have, now this one you did call up the name, the fancy name, I'm going to call it rutin from Japanese Sephora flowers extract powder.
Yes. Okay. So basically, again, this is very similar to what we've just been talking about. It's the rawest possible form of some really powerful active ingredients. So Sephora Japonica contains the flavonoids quercetin, rutin, and troxrutin. And basically, these flavonoids activate that rate-limiting enzyme, that NAMPT enzyme that declines with age in the salvage pathway and stops the recycling. These three flavonoids switch it back on, and there's an awful amount, a load of scientific data to show that's exactly what they do, and we've got our own data to show it does that as well. So they activate this rate limiting enzyme, and this enzyme is critical to the production of NAD. So this is fixing the salvage pathway, or fixing
the machinery,
the factory.
Yeah. So this is addressing the machinery. So the first two were going at the CD38, which chews up an inordinate amount of NAD. Now we're fixing the machinery.
Exactly that. Basically. Yeah.
Okay. Black pepper fruit extract powder.
So black pepper contains an active molecule called piperine.
Yeah.
And basically piperine is used to increase the uptake of nutrients from the small intestine. It allows them to enter the blood and access the rest of the body easier. Again, just going back to my obsession with bioavailability.
It's a good obsession to have, actually.
Yes. And, you know, there's no point putting all these ingredients in if they're not going to get into people's cells at the end of the day. So again, that is that is not in there to help with NAD. That is in there to aid absorption.
Perfect. And then our last guest here, our last little player, is alpha lipoic acid. And there's a fair amount in there. That's a nice dose of ALA.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite molecules because it has so many benefits. And basically, ALA actually boosts NAD in two different ways. So firstly, it activates a cellular energy sensor called AMPK.
Yeah.
And what AMPK does is it leads to an increase in NAD in the cells. It signals to increase NAD. Interestingly, AMPK is how activation is how you get the beneficial effects of exercise and fasting. They both activate AMPK.
Okay.
And that's how both of those things increase NAD. So ALA is an AMPK activator. So it's kind of a bit like a fasting mimetic or an exercise mimetic.
Perfect.
One way. The second way that ALA actually activates, increases NAD is it activates pathways that promote the conversion of NADH to NAD plus. So again, keeping that ratio really in check.
Yeah.
So that has two beneficial ways it does it.
Okay. Well,
and one thing to point out again, just because I love ALA, you've got to be really careful when you take supplements with ALA because it actually exists in two forms. You've got something called RALA, which is what we use, and something called SALA. So SALA is the synthetic and natural version, which does absolutely nothing in the body. And there's loads of studies to support that.
Okay.
And RALA is the natural version, and it's way, way more expensive. But it is the one that actually is accepted by the body and actually has physiological benefits to the body. So always make sure you use RALA. Some companies will do what they call a racemic mixture of 50-50 of the two. Ours is pure RALA. It's got no synthetic in whatsoever.
So is this the situation of mirror images of molecules,
yes,
which actually fits the lock and the other one that doesn't? Okay. So guys, you can't see this, but I'm holding up my hands. So molecules can exist as your right hand or your left hand. So they look like they look almost identical, but one is a mirror image of the other. And which form you're getting is ultimately going to make an impact on whether the body can use it or not use it, because it's like a lock and key mechanism. If you want to, you know, to kind of simplify it, you want to make sure. So, okay. So that's the magic of Nushita. I'm so glad I asked, because this is so interesting. And I definitely have a few friends who have looked at this and go, okay. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that interview to understand where and all this comes into play. And that's so fascinating. I love that you've gone with whole food where you can.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of systems pharmacology. And it's, you know, one of my missions is to really get people thinking in that whole systems way. Yeah. Because actually using combinations of different molecules together, you can put the most sort of inconspicuous group of molecules together, which alone, you know, wouldn't do anything. I mean, who would think that any of those molecules would help boost NAD apart from the precursor, obviously.
Yeah.
But actually put them together and you've got a super NAD booster. You know, it boosts NAD 4 times higher than a precursor alone. And also some of the studies that we've done, we actually used that formulation of all the ingredients to fix the cell, but we took the nicotinamide out, so there was no precursor. And we found that you can boost NAD by the same amount as NR without any precursor. So just by fixing the factory. So for us, that was like a really geeky, you know, science experiment just to prove our point, which I've presented at some conferences. I was like, look, you know, you don't even need a precursor, just fix the cell. And then look what happens when you put a precursor in as well. You know, you've got to think of anything in biology as a whole.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic approach. And so, first of all, a lot of this research is referenced on your website, which I think people can access quite easily. Yeah. But I think when we first spoke, you were talking about how this is just the beginning for Nushita, right?
Yes.
So you spent all this time tossing things in the waste bin, if you will, in the pharma world, which now you've kind of grabbed those bins and gone off with them. Are you able to talk to a little bit about what's next on your sites to go after?
Absolutely. You know, NAD was just one of the first things, because it was kind of an easy one to start with, because there was already companies selling it. And we were like, it's really obvious how they're taking a single target approach, and we could do so much better getting people to think about it as a whole. But, you know, we are basically looking at all the hallmarks of aging and developing ways in the lab that we can use this approach to target them, because at the end of the day, all of these things are really complicated, and this single target or a single drug or a single supplement is never going to really hit it.
Yeah.
So the next thing that we're looking at is senescence.
Topic. Yeah.
Yeah. So senescent cells are basically cells that, it's kind of a protection mechanism when we're young. So if we get DNA damage in our cell, there's a risk that cell could become cancerous. So our cells kind of trigger an emergency switch where it's got to a point where they can't repair themselves anymore. And they're like, right, this cell's a write-off and we need to get rid of it before it becomes cancerous. But instead of sort of shutting the cell down and recycling it, they just shut the cell down and it goes to sleep. So senescence is kind of like sleeping cells. And for a long time, people believed that senescent cells just sort of sat there not causing any trouble. But it's now known that actually they cause an awful lot of trouble. And that's because they secrete a lot of inflammatory junk, which obviously is not very good for the body. And it also causes nearby cells to become senescent themselves. So you get an accumulation of these cells.
Yeah.
And also you've got these cells sitting in tissues and organs that aren't doing their job. Yeah. So, you know, by the time people are elderly, the heart is made up of like 30% senescent cells. So they get a weak heart, their organs start to fail. You know, your skin's saggy because it's full of cells that just aren't doing the job. So they're really problematic. And all the science has now shown that if you can remove even just a small proportion of these cells from the body, you can actually have a significant impact on health span and, you know, have real rejuvenation in mammals. That's been demonstrated. So the results are just absolutely fascinating from a scientific perspective. But again, you know, we look look at the way that drugs companies are doing this and supplement companies are doing this and go, they're still taking this single target approach where they're looking at very isolated bits of senescent cells. So what we've done is basically tried to look at different targets, or not just one target, combinations of targets in senescent cells, to try and, you know, inhibit them from secreting the senescence and ultimately remove them from the body. And, you know, we have found some molecules that some of them are drugs.
Like rapamycin is the big one, right? The problem with rapamycin, of course, is it's an immune suppressant, which is a questionable.
Well, yeah. Right, and that's like, navitoclax and all sorts of other drugs like that, but they're nasty drugs that you don't really want to be taking. And dasatinib and things like that. So our aim was really to find things that were supplements and that were a lot safer, and we've succeeded at doing that. So that's next in the pipeline for development. We've got a bit more lab testing to do. And the other thing is we have found different molecules that are more drug-like, which will never be supplements, but that's the nature of molecules. You know, a molecule is a molecule. Like, it's only a regulatory body that defines it as a drug or a supplement. The body doesn't know the difference. So they're for a longer term plan.
Right. So that'll be next. So is that a 2021? Can we look forward to that in 2021, do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Amazing. Okay. Well, listen, we've been at this for a while. It's been fascinating. I could definitely talk to you for a lot longer. I know that, this has been a great journey. Thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to having you back on when you're ready to talk about your next entry in the marketplace. I think that, and now I'm, you know, it's been a while since we spoke. I think we have a promo code, a discount code for our audience. Do you happen to remember what it was? I think it might've been Longevity10, but you know what, guys?
That sounds right.
I'll put it in the show notes and that'll give you 10% off to give a try to Time Plus for yourself. Nicola, just quickly before we go, some people will experience noticeable benefits quite quickly, depending on where they are on that, you know, on that scale of lacking energy, of low cellular energy, let's say. But on average, would you say that people should give it like a month or 2 months? Like, what's your...
Yeah, we say, you know, a month to 3 months, but honestly, some of our customers will email us within a week because they've had such a good response. And in the clinical blood samples from our clinical trial, we find that NAD levels increase within days in the blood.
Wow.
So the type of things that people come back and report are definitely, the major one is energy, a much better energy level. The second biggest one is sleep. Much better sleep and quality of sleep, which isn't surprising because NAD is really closely linked to circadian rhythms. Brain fog, getting rid of brain fog, particularly in premenopausal women. That is a category, again, that we hadn't really expected, but get a lot of women writing in to say how much it's helped them just to have more mental clarity and sharpness. The other thing is that, you know, we get some funny emails in, a lot of men telling us how strong their nails and hair have become, not the women.
Oh, you're kidding.
We get it from women as well, but we've had quite a few of men letting us know about that side effect. So
well, and you know, guys, I mean, it just really speaks to the importance of cell, of going at the cell. You know, it's basically going as low up the food chain, if you will, like getting ahead of all these symptoms and addressing that root cause. Mm. And when you address the cellular energy, there's almost no telling what's going to fall into place from that, depending on what's happening in your body.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. And, so, you know, and again, that was one of the other reasons we started with NAD, because it's found in every single cell in your body. Yeah. Therefore, it's likely to have a really major impact if it's low, and equally a major impact to your quality of life when you restore it, because it impacts everything.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Okay. Well, Nicola, thank you so much. This has been great. I'm really looking forward to our next talk, but this has been fantastic. And we're recording this, you guys, 3 days before Christmas. in 2020 as we boot 2020 to the curb in about a week or so. So I'm going to wish you a very wonderful holiday, Christmas season, if I'm sure you celebrate Christmas, and a very happy new year. And that's about it.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been really lovely to chat, and happy new year, and hopefully a better 2021 for yourself and all the listeners.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Nicola. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.